My friends and companions avoid me because of my wounds. My neighbors stay far away. If you read the Psalms long enough, you'll stumble across quite a lot of lines like these lines from Psalm 38. And whoever wrote these lines had experienced trauma and wasn't afraid to name it. But what happens when you put the Psalms into conversation with recent scholarship on trauma and resilience? That is exactly the question Rebecca Poe Hayes is asking in her current research, and it's what she joins us to talk about on today's episode. Hey friends, you are listening to episode 1 of the 4th season of Currents in Religion, a podcast brought to you by the Religion Department at Baylor University and by Baylor University Press. I'm Zen Hess. Thanks for listening today. Our guest today is Old Testament scholar Rebecca Poe Hayes. She is a proud graduate of the PhD program here at Baylor and currently serves as Assistant Professor of Christian Scriptures at Baylor University's Truett Seminary. She has long focused on the Psalms in her research, and her current research studies the intersection between the Psalter, trauma, and resilience. She has authored and edited books on the subject forthcoming from both Oxford University Press and Baylor University Press. We're thrilled to have her on the show. So, here's the interview. Enjoy. Dr. Poe Hayes, thanks for joining us on Currents in Religion.
Yeah, I'm so glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about the story of how you became interested in the Psalms.
Yeah, so I wasn't initially.
Good. This is how all good stories begin.
Right, yeah. I actually had spent most of my life as a Christian, a churchgoer, a double PK, double pastor kid, actually, thinking the Psalms were fairly boring.
Yeah.
You know, they're all the same and it's hallelujah and, you know, that's nice, but not very inspiring, I guess, for me.
Yeah.
I came to Baylor to do my PhD with Dr. Bill Bellinger on the topic of stories, Old Testament parables, actually, is what was and continues to be sort of my central animating love in Old Testament scholarship.
Great.
And so I started into my dissertation actually as a dissertation on parables in the Old Testament. And I was gonna deal with all of them and with how they were functioning and all of these kind of things. And so I started work on that with him and realized, oh, well, this will mean getting a handle on the former prophets, several books in the former prophets, on Ecclesiastes and Isaiah and, you know, just on and on and on. So many different parts of the Old Testament, and it quickly became unmanageable as a dissertation. And so at this point, I had been graduate assistant for Dr. Bellinger and had gotten to teach a Psalms class to the undergraduates and had taken a Psalms seminar and had come to find out, oh, the Psalms are not all the same.
That's right.
They're really, really interesting. And here's a world-class Psalms scholar. And nobody had really looked at the way that stories show up in the Psalms, parables in the Psalms. Arguably there are none. Arguably there are, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, well, maybe I'll just focus in and do that. And so that's how I ended up becoming a Psalms scholar, I suppose.
Yes.
It was the narrowing down, which happens in doctoral work, I suppose.
Yeah. And that trajectory has continued into your career. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that is sort of the natural progression of research. One project begets another project. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's, I would say, I think I mentioned my love for story and parable.
Yeah.
Is still sort of the through line in everything I do. So whether it's work in the Psalms, different facets of narrative, or in Isaiah, I've done some work in Isaiah. So biblical Hebrew poetry more broadly.
Yeah.
It's still, I love how stories work. And so I've actually a couple of books down the the contract. I've got a book on Old Testament parables where I'm coming back to that. But yeah, the Psalms have become a real love. I mean, I really do love them now, and mm-hmm. and I'm really appreciative of Dr. Bellinger nudging me that yeah. way.
So your current project, the one that you are on leave to be writing on, mm-hmm. is one that interprets the Psalms in conversation with literature on trauma and resilience. So tell us a little bit more about that scholarship, about mm-hmm. about the scholarship on trauma and resilience that you're engaging yeah. as you read the Psalms.
Yeah. And I got to this just through conversation with a friend of mine, a really good friend of mine who is a counselor and does a lot of trauma therapy. And we were talking about, we were just having a conversation. I was telling her about something I was working on with some mm-hmm. Psalms, and she was telling me about some therapy she was doing with a client, and we started seeing some commonalities. So that's sort of what pushed me, or first made me think about these kinds of intersections.
It reminds me, sorry to interrupt, reminds me of Ellen Davis,
yes.
who I think was either told or tells her students that when they're in the midst of crisis, they ought to go and scream the imprecatory psalms as a kind of way of dealing. So, I mean, the counseling kind of thing. Yeah,
it's a real thing. My husband used to do research in prisons, actually, maximum security prisons. And he tells a story about a chaplain who was working with an inmate and said, you know, a lot of your problems that you're dealing with, I think you're just angry. And so he reserved the prison library for him and said, you've got the room as long as you want. You need to go and just yell at God for a while. And so I think he was in there for several hours.
But,
you know, I mean, it is a real thing. It helps. There's some real power to that kind of thing. But anyway, so got me thinking about these kind of conversations got me thinking about trauma and resilience. And I had experienced some personal sort of traumas that also factored into me becoming aware of this area. The foundational person that I really engaged with was Judith Herman, who's sort of a classic in trauma research. And she wrote a book, Trauma and Recovery, it's at least in its second edition now.
Okay.
But one of the things that she talks about is just she observes sort of these major movements that mm-hmm. that have to happen in the process of healing. And from what I've been able to gather, again, not as, you know, I'm a biblical scholar, not a psychologist, but I've tried to consult with counselors and psychologists and social workers and people that it is their primary work. But from what I've been able to see, there's some of these general movements seem to hold true no matter what type of trauma therapy you're dealing with. But she talked about, you know, you need to, before any kind of healing can take place, there needs to be, well, an end to the trauma. You can't be, you can't still be under threat.
Of course.
And so this idea of safety and a person that you can trust to process with, you know, with all the, you need safety and security. And only then can you start the work of remembering what has happened and remembering in constructive ways. So not letting the traumatic memories overwhelm you to where you can't, where they control you rather than you sort of having control and being able to arrange them. So one of the things that I love, and this is back to my love for storytelling, is she talks about the way that trauma works on your brain. And chemically, biologically, it literally disrupts our ability to tell a story about what happened. So we can't sort of piece together cause and effect. We can't put sequence onto things. We can't recognize what's past and what's present. And so a story is moving from a beginning, middle, you know, beginning, middle, end, and it's a sequence of this happened and then this happened and then this happened. And so when we've been traumatized, we can't really do that. And so we have snapshots, right? We have moments that we remember, and that it can be a visual thing. It can be smell. It can be a sound. It can be a posture, but we can't put those together into any kind of coherent narrative to know that it's over. Right. And that's where, you know, you have things like flashbacks or mm-hmm. you react as if you're under threat, even when you're not, things like that. And so after you've established safety and established sort of a person to that you can trust to work with, you can start remembering what happened in that constructive way to tell yeah. the story. And then you can start feeling all the feelings that you mm-hmm. need to feel in a healthy way. And so that's the, you know, the catharsis kind of day. Yeah. You know, maybe you need to yell. And mm-hmm. like we said, that imprecatory psalms, maybe are good for that. Yeah. Sometimes it can be anything. You mourn yeah. what has happened and what has been lost and what has changed you.
Mm-hmm.
And that involves sort of reclaiming some agency,
right?
Which then moves us to that last sort of piece of healing. And no healing is ever perfect,
sure.
But it's this idea that you then need to reconnect with life. Trauma disrupts our ability to live in the world, to be in relationship, and so you reconnect. And part of that is taking the story of what happened to you, that you have remembered, that you have mourned, recognizing how it has changed you, but then integrating it into the story of your future,
yeah.
right? That you have a life that moves on. You have things to do. You have relationships. You have purpose. Mm-hmm. You have meaning. And so it's those broad movements. And there's different ways that different therapies get at it, but that's Judith Herman's sort of basic model.
Okay. So you've just really helpfully outlined the kind of steps that you're dealing with, or that you're learning about in trauma healing. Mm-hmm. Another part of your project is resilience building. Could you say a little bit too about how resilience building looks a little different from trauma healing, or yeah. would you say that they're kind of the same?
They're related. I mean, I think they're really closely related.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, the resilience piece, I didn't go looking for it. It sort of dropped in my lap. Somebody asked
That's
me to
nice.
Write something on it
yeah.
Because of the work I'd done on trauma. And I was
okay.
like, oh, I hadn't really thought about this. And it's become what I'm more interested in than the trauma piece, actually.
Okay.
But, you know, resilience is this this idea that of being able to handle what life throws at you.
Mm-hmm.
And so life is hard. Bad things are going to happen. We're going to have struggles, and resilience is the capacity to cope with that.
Right.
So that, negative things don't automatically mean we're going to fall apart.
Sure.
And so building up that resilience. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it's become a pretty common thing to talk about, mainly in the context of like, oh, nobody has resilience. You know, our students just don't have any resilience.
Sure.
And we are seeing decreased resilience and
okay.
folks, but yeah, there's different predictors of resilience. You know, what makes you mm-hmm. a resilient person, and one of those things, one of the key things, is being in relationship, being in community,
sure.
having social support. So that can be family, that can be friends, that mm-hmm. can be a church group, that can be even a relationship with a higher power, with God.
Right.
Can be part of this social support. And if you have that, I mean, that is, I think, the number one predictor of
yeah.
resilience. But other things come into that as well. And this is where you see some overlap with the relationship piece overlaps with trauma healing,
of course,
kind of things. But
right. Having safe people
having
with
safe
whom you
people.
Can share the story. And
right.
And, yeah.
And the reconnecting,
yeah.
you know, with
right.
life and moving forward. Things like having a story. So
mm-hmm.
here comes my story piece again, that gives you purpose. So seeing that you are part of something bigger, you
mm-hmm.
have a goal, you have meaning. So that kind of, giving you purpose, that makes us more resilient.
Right.
And then things like, this is one that's interesting with Psalms research. Even like singing and humming and
yeah.
making music
mm-hmm.
Can make you more resilient. And some of that is a very biologically
yeah.
grounded kind of thing because of the way that the it vibrates parts and makes you feel, you know, triggers mm-hmm. hormones and all of these yeah. things. But singing can make you more resilient. So when I look at the Psalms,
yeah,
you know, the Psalms were not individual things. They're not mm-hmm. for private, you know, go in your room and read these by yourselves. These are communal documents.
Right.
These are communal texts. And so the fact of them is pointing to community.
Mm-hmm.
And then even beyond that, they're dialogues, right?
Right.
Or at least, you know, some kind of conversation with God
yeah.
And with the community, because they're often addressing each other. And so the Psalms themselves, the very fact of them is pointing to relationship and pushing us into relationship.
Mm-hmm.
They're giving us a narrative that can be a frame for our life and gives us purpose, things to do,
yeah.
gives meaning to the things that happen to us, whether it's bad things or good things that happen to us. It's giving it meaning. And so mm-hmm. that makes us more resilient. And yeah, singing makes us resilient.
Yeah.
So.
I love that. I'm happy about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are listening to Currents in Religion, and I am speaking with Rebecca Poe Hayes. Before we get back to the interview, I'd like to share a little clip introducing you all to a Baylor University Press book that I think you might like. I'm here with Cade Jarrell, an editor at Baylor University Press. Cade, what do you have for us today?
Yeah, thanks, and glad to be here. Today, let's pitch a book by Catherine Dell, who is a senior Hebrew Bible scholar at Cambridge University. The Lord by Wisdom Founded the Earth. So Catherine is a masterclass scholar of particularly wisdom literature. And so what she is doing here is, yes, it's textual critical scholarship, but it's also biblical theology. So we at Baylor Press, we love books that combine both theology and textual criticism. Catherine here paints a picture of the relationship between these two motifs of covenant and creation that helps solidify the biblical narrative, looking at texts like Job, Proverbs. So there's been this long-running debate in Hebrew Bible scholarship that you have these two camps of thought in early Israel between those who advocated for the covenant theological relationship and those who advocated for the more creational, so a more universal picture. And she is trying to bridge those in showing how the wisdom literature actually helps bring those two together. So this is a seminal and kind of capstone piece of scholarship that is important for Christians and Jews alike.
Awesome. Thanks, Cade.
Yep.
You've pointed to some ways that the Psalms relate. Could you bring us up a little bit, maybe more closely, to mm-hmm. a couple of Psalms that the study that you're doing on trauma and resilience help us to read in a certain way?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll point you to at least two. The first one that I worked with is Psalm 78. Mm-hmm. So this is the second longest psalm in the Psalter, okay. after Psalm 119. So it's a really long psalm. You probably don't get the whole thing read to you on a Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
It is in the lectionary, but only pieces of it at different times.
Okay.
But it's this long psalm. It's a historical psalm, but it's got this wisdom-esque piece at the beginning. Mm. So it's, you know, listen, my children, I'm going to open my mouth in a parable. So that's where I got to it,
uh-huh.
parable. And I'm going to tell you these things and these riddles. And then it goes into this historical recitation. It tells the story of the Exodus from Egypt, the wilderness wanderings, a little bit of sort of the entrance into the mm-hmm. land, fall of Israel, the northern kingdom, and then sort of leaves off with sort of pitching the story to Judah in the south. And, you know, how are we going to go?
Yeah.
And so what I saw there is that wisdom piece at the beginning. So usually wisdom and history
mm-hmm.
as genres in the Hebrew Bible are kept really separate. I mean,
okay.
wisdom is, universal. It's not tied to particular, you know, to salvation history or anything mm-hmm. like that. And so it's interesting to have the really wisdom-y kind of language and then this very covenantal kind of kind of thing as well. And so I was like, well, why is that? And one of the things that I think could be going on is that wisdom piece, because it's grounded in trusted relationships with elders, mm-hmm. right? It's this sense of safe, and with the world, we can know it, and we can find what is stable and what is right. sure. And so it's creating this sense of safety and security at the beginning. Hmm. And then it starts remembering what's happened to these people. And it's not all good. It's actually Psalm 78 is sort of a downer in terms of, you know, they had bad things happen to them and God helped them. And then they forgot God. And so bad things happened again. And it was bad and bad again. Mm-hmm. And all that. So, and then Israel falls. And then, but God has chosen Judah. And how's that going to go? And sort of leaving it open-ended.
Mm-hmm.
So remembering what's happened and mourning that and seeing, but then also pointing to the agency of the people moving forward. So reclaiming that agency.
Right.
It's in their hands. They have control over the story mm-hmm. as it moves forward. And so I think there's this real sort of healing kind of movement to that, that they're not bound. This is a history. This is their past. This is what happened to them. That's changed them,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't have to be that way forever. It doesn't.
Right.
They have some control. They have some choice, some freedom, and I think that's a powerful sort of movement out of captivity to trauma.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing too, just to think out loud about, because what I'm hearing is that the categories of like trauma healing
mm-hmm.
that you've discovered or that you've been learning about, they provide a kind of heuristic for looking at the text and asking, what do we see happening here?
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that, I mean, I just was by default imagining when you were talking about trauma healing, individuals.
Yeah.
That would just be an individual phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
But the psalm that you've just described is deeply communal in
yes.
a way that the trauma healing that could be going on would be a kind of collective healing.
Yes. And I think that's right. And I think that's something, it's interesting. That's actually a real criticism of a lot of trauma theory, is that it has been so Western and so individualistic
in its
outlook, because that's sort of how we
yeah.
tend to operate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not
me
true.
Being case in point.
Right. And it's not true of
right.
a lot of the world
wow.
through a lot of history. And so it's very, and I think maybe part of why our resilience is going, this is, I don't know, but part of why our resilience is society is going down is because we are less and less community oriented and less in touch with how the ways that I am hurt is really the ways that we are hurt
mm-hmm.
and the way that my neighbor is hurt.
Yeah.
Really impacts me.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether that is, well, I mean, we can get real specific about some of these things, but yeah, it's a communal thing. And I think this is actually another, so I did a piece looking at Psalms 105 and 106,
okay.
which are also historical Psalms. And they both tell the same basic history. Again, it's related to the Exodus.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, big thing for the Hebrew Bible.
Yeah.
But one of them is very sort of glass half full about it, right?
Okay.
Like, this is so wonderful what God did, and we were so thankful, and wasn't this beautiful? And the other one is glass half empty, like, God did all these great things, and we really did not respond well,
mm-hmm.
And really highlighting the failures of Israel. And I was studying these sort of when all the there's a lot of conversation about the bill in Florida about how do we teach history?
Right.
And do we teach history in a way that makes our innocent little children
mm-hmm.
Feel uncomfortable or feel guilty?
Yeah.
And when I look at the Psalms as a model for how to teach our children and how to teach our communities, they're really comfortable
mm-hmm.
with making us uncomfortable.
Right.
And with saying, yeah, this is your history, and you are part of this community for good and for ill. And you've got to recognize that and name that and own that and think about the ways that the bad things that your ancestors did might shape the present.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a positive, that's an empowering thing, because then you can change
right.
things. And so I think the Psalms have some real practical, like, pedagogical things to teach us too.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Was the Psalm 105 and 106 pair one of the original ones that you were going to mention? Because you had, I think, started out as saying you might have a second
example. I wasn't thinking of that one. I was thinking
so
of another one.
So we've had 78, we've had 105 and 106.
And 106.
So give us one more.
Okay. Well, one that I really love for, actually, I've just really come to love this psalm. And it's sort of a weird psalm.
Great.
Psalm 69.
Okay.
And so this is a lament psalm. And so there's some trauma, you know, some trauma kind of things here, because it is a lament. So it's... Mm-hmm. There's darkness, and it's, you know, I'm sinking in the mire. There's no foothold. I've come into the deep waters. I'm overwhelmed. You know, the floods are coming over me. I'm weary with my crying. My throat is parched. My eyes grow dim. You know, and so this is very much sort of, you know, I'm in despair. I'm in, mm-hmm. I'm depressed. I'm suffering. You know, so you've got all that kind of stuff. But what I love about this psalm, and again, it comes back to the storytelling, because that is my first love,
mm-hmm.
Is the psalmist sort of gets to re-narrate what has happened. So they're reclaiming the story, because the whole psalm is about friends and family and people that are supposed to be close to the psalmist,
mm-hmm.
people that they were in relationship with, that have been telling false narratives about the psalmist, who have misunderstood, who have maybe willfully misunderstood, right? Who are saying negative things.
Mm-hmm.
And the psalmist gets to retell that story and to tell it truly, or to tell it I'm a woman, so I'm going to say for herself, right?
Yeah.
Like if I'm reading this psalm, she tells her own story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually there's sort of this recurring kind of language of storytelling, and even recounting and all of this kind of stuff in there. So I think that's a real sort of resilience piece, right? So it's somebody that doesn't have that's taking the negative experience and reframing it.
Mm-hmm.
The power of positive thinking, right? And there's something to that,
yeah,
right?
I guess.
But then she goes into imprecations.
Yeah.
And it's this whole long, like, I mean, it's some pretty good cursing, right? she goes on and on. So let their table be a trap for them, a snare for their allies. Let their eyes be darkened, make their loins tremble continually. You know, let your burning anger overtake them. May their camp be a desolation. All of this. So in verse 28, this is in the English, you know, let them be blotted out of the book of the living. Let them not be enrolled among the righteous. I mean, if you want to put that in
mm-hmm.
common parlance, I mean, that's a goddamn them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a really strong kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so even that, I think it's the psalmist telling a story of what she wants to happen to those mm-hmm. who have harmed her. And there's something powerful in that of reclaiming that agency, and it's not that she's gonna do it, right? She's not saying she's gonna do it, but it is sort of owning how she feels, and I think that's important, especially if you're a person of faith. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, God knows how you feel anyway, but
anyway,
I think just in terms of trauma and resilience, there's power to that. And then finally, the psalm, it moves into the sense of purpose, right?
Right.
So that my story, the psalmist's story, these bad things that have happened, I'm thinking about somebody else. I'm thinking about next generation. So, you know, let the oppressed see it and be glad. You who seek God, let your hearts revive. For the Lord hears the needy and does not despise his own. So it's this sense of... and this is something that you see in trauma healing kind of literature as well, is if you can take what has happened to you and use it for good.
Mm.
So this is sort of the impulse you see, you know, for families where there's a tragic death and they sponsor a foundation, or if they, you know, to do research into, you know, if it was a cancer or something. Sure. And we want to take something that was so horrible and mm-hmm. so tragic and should not happen.
Right.
And try to help it not happen yeah. to somebody else. Yeah. And there's real power in that as well. And I think that's what you see at the end of this psalm is, you know, this happened to me and it was terrible. And I've been changed by it and I suffered. Mm-hmm. But God is good and let my story help somebody else.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So I've come to love this psalm.
Wow. Thank you for that. So part of your work at Truett is training folks who are going into various ministerial contexts, whether a congregation or probably some are training, cross-training for counseling contexts and those sorts of things. I'm curious how your students at Truett have responded to this approach mm-hmm. as you've introduced it to them in the classroom.
Yeah. You know, it's been really, they've been really curious about it. And I think it's helped them recognize the relevance, I suppose, of the Old Testament in mm-hmm. some different ways because it humanizes it.
Yeah.
So I teach Hebrew, and then I tend to teach a class that covers the prophets, mm-hmm. the prophetic books, and then the books, the writings.
Yeah.
So Psalms and, you know, these other things. And that tends to be of all the Bible, of the whole Bible, the whole of Christian scriptures, those tend to be the least familiar mm-hmm. parts to people, even people in a seminary preparing for ministry.
Yeah.
A lot of times the class I teach will have been the first time really that some of these yeah. students have cracked open, you know, Haggai or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Because they feel very distant and they feel mm-hmm. foreign and they feel irrelevant. And so thinking about bringing questions to these biblical books of what were the communities that first received these texts, what were they going through?
Yeah.
And how did these texts speak into that?
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of big questions, what kinds of big hurts? And how did they maybe help?
Yeah.
You know, and how do we see evidence of that? And, you know, so there's some scholars like David Carr, Nancy DeClassy Walford, who is also a Baylor grad yeah. with the same doctoral supervisor as me. But they've talked about how scripture and the Psalms in particular for Nancy DeClassy Walford are really part of a big part of the reason why the Hebrew people survived at yeah. all. Because they had these scriptures that were helping them be resilient and survive slavery and forced migration and exile and
right.
you know, the crucifixion of their God, you know, like
yeah.
what are, that's moving forward right
yeah.
to the New Testament. But so I think for students it's been helpful for them just in terms of broadly reading the Old Testament of it becoming more relatable, because a lot of these are still questions that we're dealing with. So
yeah.
I had a Ukrainian student and we were studying Lamentations the day that Russia invaded Ukraine, you know? And
yeah.
and so that language there that seems so foreign is suddenly not foreign at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, that, yeah, I think that has been a big thing. And I think it's just helpful to become more trauma-informed generally as they're mm-hmm. going into churches and nonprofits and whatever else they're. A lot of our students are doing we have a dual degree in with social work,
okay.
School of Social Work. And so a lot of our students are preparing for social work careers. Mm-hmm. And so just being more aware of some of these, the effects of trauma and the factors that can help with healing, but also with resilience building is good. Yeah. One of my students is a Mennonite pastor down
okay.
in San Antonio, and his church's primary ministry is to asylum seekers.
Wow.
And he was in my class, and that was so helpful just hearing, and he's been using hearing from that, those experiences and those encounters. And then he started using the Psalms in his ministry to them, because most of those asylum seekers are Christians. Yeah. And so these are their scriptures. And so it's a natural thing to turn to you.
Right.
Something familiar. And so he's been doing some really cool work with the Psalms and trauma healing with those communities.
That's great. Yeah. It does seem like this approach is richly pastoral, pastoral. And a great resource in a season where we are still emerging, in some ways still in a collectively traumatic experience from COVID and the isolation that came along with that and the way that that has rippled out into parishes and colleges and other places of community. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think part of how this research all developed for me, it was during COVID that a lot of this was really forming for me. So it's very relevant, I think.
Yeah. Dr. Poe Hayes, thank you so much for making time to talk with us about your research here on Currents in Religion.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Rebecca Poe Hayes. If you did, make sure that you share it with someone else who might like it too. If you haven't already, subscribe so you don't miss future episodes and leave us a review. That'll help other people find this podcast too. Next week, I'm so excited, we have a conversation with Menachem Fish and Deborah Band, authors of a lovely new illuminated philosophical commentary on Qohelet, which is also known as Ecclesiastes. Until then, take care.